You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour two on this Wednesday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We have comments from the Green Bay Packers on Aaron Rodgers. Did Aaron know on draft night they were taking Jordan Love? Have that for you coming up here in a moment. Spent a lot of time in the first hour talking about Simone Biles, sort of the fallout there. She's not going to be in the individual all-around competition coming up on Thursday, but there's the chance over the weekend in the separate events in gymnastics that she might take part in that. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp@danpatrick.com. He has been Mr. Olympics for a few decades, Bob Costas. Will join us. Got a new show on HBO coming up on Friday night. We'll talk to Bob about that. Also, Dale Earnhardt Jr., NASCAR on NBC. We thought Jr. would be a great guest to talk about sort of the stress that he went through, that mental part of it where he wasn't winning. He inherited his dad's fan base, and he wasn't living up to the expectations, certainly what they had for him and what he had for himself. And the week after his father died in the crash at Daytona, he had to go out and get in a car and race. And so we thought Junior would be great. He's always been very open and honest with us. And he'll join us coming up a little bit later on. Say good morning to our radio partners, numbering nearly 400, including SOUN-FM in Toronto, Iowa City, AM 800, Rapid City, 1150 AM. Thank you for your support down through the years. Don't miss the Peacock original docuseries for Ball in Country. Get a behind-the-scenes look at the 2021 training camp in Las Vegas, plus catch never-before-seen footage of past Olympic players for Ball in Country, streaming now on Peacock. Go to PeacockTV.com to sign up. McLovin, what do you have for me today?
So I asked our audience, what are we undercovering vis-a-vis the Olympics and Aaron Rodgers? And this is the order they went. You've mentioned some of these. Number one, the San Francisco Giants being the best team in baseball, record-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the MLB trade deadline. Number three, the NBA draft. Remember that one?
Yes.
And then four, NFL training camp starting everywhere today. And five, Shohei Ohtani. Is there any of those that you notice are particularly undercovered?
Well, it feels like Shohei Ohtani has been undercovered because of the magnitude of what he's done. I mean, the past month, he finally got some coverage. Certainly that week, All-Star Week, Home Run Derby. The draft used to be a big thing. It was a big buildup. Couldn't wait. Who's going one? Who's going to be the sleeper in here? Somebody going to get a bargain? Somebody going to trade? Now it feels like, I think Pistons are taking Cade Cunningham. And then you got a bunch of other freshmen who are going to be taken here. Yeah, McLove.
Isn't this a good draft? Because you have Jalen Suggs, you have Evan Mobley, at least like some. This is actually a good draft.
Yes.
Last year was terrible.
Yeah, I think you've got some real talent here, but you don't have that prize where you go. And this is, I mean, get used to this because, you know, kids are going to go to the G League, may go overseas. You don't have a Zion Williamson. And I don't know if we're going to have that opportunity to have a singular pick, you know, a person player like that. Because where we're headed, coming out of high school, going to the G League, going to Europe, are you going to go to college? Does name, image, and likeness mean you might get some of these bigger name players who go in because they can make $1 million a year? I mean, what would Zion make going to Duke now? If the quarterback at Alabama, who hasn't started a game, is reportedly going to make $1 million in endorsements this year. He wasn't a household name. What's his name? Bryce Young?
Yeah.
Not a household name. Good quarterback. Zion was a household name at 15. YouTube star. What would Zion make? Do we start at... And I don't know how Duke would embrace this. We know that Alabama, SEC schools, football schools will probably be a little bit more embracing of this. But I don't know. Does Mike Krzyzewski say to Zion's family, whatever you can make... Like, I don't know how the coaches will get involved in this. But Zion, what's the starting price for him at Duke? I don't know. $5 million? $10 million? Yes, McLovin.
Okay, Bryce Young, I remember you actually saw him play in modern day. I remember
Yes. You
were talking about it. So he's a little bit of an exception because of that weird modern day Don Bosco thing.
Well, you know, Friday night, Saturday, when you're lonely and you're sitting downstairs by yourself smoking a cigar and having a beer, I tend to flip around and I love watching high school football. I watched Julio Jones in high school. Like, it's just like, man, this guy's great. And well, he turned out to be great. But yeah, modern day, for some reason, I always end up watching modern day football. Yeah, Paul.
Your texts are great, too, because it'll be like 9:45 on a Saturday night, and you'll be like, channel 562, which is really far down the dial. And it's like the Illinois 5A state title game is going on.
I love it. You know, Texas high school football, I don't care what division, I'm watching it. Yeah, McLovin.
That's a funny thing about NIL. People keep talking about college. These guys are getting a lot of heat in high school already.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have a junior who's making $100,000.
Yeah, with social media. Absolutely. All right, the Packers met with the media. Now, you've had months to get ready for this. Prepare for all questions. You got to balance your answers. You know what? You can share blame, but you got to accept blame here. You got to commit to Aaron Rodgers, but you got to keep your options open here. Brian Gutekunst was asked about Aaron Rodgers having the right to ask to be traded in 2022. Brian Gutekunst said, what he's done for this organization, I think every year he at least deserves the conversation about where he's headed, where we're headed. They're still working through the contract. All right. That's benign. Here is Brian Gutekunst, the Packers GM. Devontae Adams is really important to us. It's very important to us moving forward that he's part of our football team and finding a way to make that work. All right. Very benign. The fact that he says Devontae Adams is really important to us, that's not news. Brian Gutekunst, future off seasons with Aaron Rodgers. He's earned the right to have those discussions. He also said that Rodgers has the, quote, same input he's always had, but added that one of the things this offseason is learning how to incorporate that. I think what that means is he had input, we just didn't listen to him. Okay, so let me give that one to you again. So the Packer GM says Aaron Rodgers has the, quote, same input he's always had, but added that, quote, one of the things of this offseason is learning how to incorporate that, end quote.
Implement that into our systems.
Here's the other one. Brian Gutekunst admitted that he didn't give Aaron Rodgers a heads up that the team was going to draft Jordan Love last offseason. Quote, on every side, the communication could have been better.
Shared blame.
Every side. That's every side, including Aaron Rodgers' side of the communication, apparently. Yes, Paulie?
I'm still going to back the Packers just a little bit on the draft day thing.
Yeah.
Let's say it was on your board to consider drafting a quarterback if it slipped. I'm not calling Aaron Rodgers to open up that can of worms until I have to open up that can of worms. Because you don't draft a quarterback, then he's mad about something you didn't do.
Yeah.
I want to be mad about something I did do.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a right answer here. There's levels of wrongness, okay? I think I just made up that expression. There's levels of wrongness here. Yes, McLovin.
If you were the GM and you had to call Aaron Rodgers on draft night, what would you say to him? Like, how do you handle that conversation?
I think you have to have a conversation prior to draft night and just say, hey, you know, you got 30 minutes here. I want to run over some things that we're looking at just to give you a heads up here. If you truly want to give him a heads up, if you think he deserves a head. Now, if he throws for 26 touchdown passes last year, nobody cares if you didn't tell him you were drafting a quarterback because they would have moved on from Aaron Rodgers in all likelihood, at least my feeling. It's they bet against Aaron Rodgers being great, and he's making them pay in a variety of ways right now. But if he throws for 26 touchdowns and they took Jordan Love, I don't think anybody's going to go, oh, man, you got to give him a heads up there. They didn't give Brett Favre a heads up. They were taking Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to guess, right? Yeah, Paulie.
You call him on draft night, you say, just like 2005, if a quarterback that we think can replace you way down the road is available, we're going to kick the tires on it. And look how good it worked out in 2005.
But then that's when he says, well, what's way down the road mean?
I'm breaking up. We're breaking up. Yeah, I'm a bad seller. I'm in Oshkosh, and there's no cell phone service here.
Here's some news on Deshaun Watson. The Texans GM, Nick Caserio, refuses to say whether Deshaun Watson will practice, not revealing much of anything, actually. This is what I learned. I talked to a source this morning about this. If the Texans discipline Deshaun Watson, they can only suspend him for 4 games. Now, they can say, we don't want you out there on the practice field because this is conduct what has happened in the offseason is conduct detrimental to the team. And if they discipline him, it's only 4 games. They're waiting to see what the NFL does, because the NFL may go, we're going to suspend you for 8 games. We're going to suspend you for the season. We're not going to do anything. But Deshaun Watson's cleared to play, but probably won't be on the playing field. Yeah, Paul.
This just in from Adam Schefter. Deshaun Watson is on the field for the Texans' first training camp practice.
Mm.
No more details. Is he practicing? Is he in uniform? But we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know how you keep him out. Like, legally, you know, due process, players' union. I'm guessing the players' union would say, look, what's he been charged with here? Yeah, Paul.
Let's say hypothetically the league, because if this case does not resolve before September, puts him on the commissioner's list short or long term. Is there any appeals process for being on the commissioner's list?
Yes, you can appeal. The problem is the person who puts you on the commissioner's exempt list is the person who hears your appeal, the commissioner.
Raj?
Yes.
So he would have to declare, like, hit the gavel, I was wrong.
Yes. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Oh.
But yeah, there is an appeal process that you can have if you go on the commissioner's exempt list. So there's a lot of unanswered questions with Deshaun Watson. Aaron Rodgers, I think we seem to be moving in a pretty nice direction. And there's detente. Google it, kids. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, Twitter's going crazy. There's all these videos. Deshaun is on the field, but he's wearing shorts and not a football uniform. And like, nobody knows what's going on here.
Mm. Okay.
So we don't know if he's going to be in a helmet throwing the ball yet. None of this has been clarified.
Because I don't know if he has to be on the field to make sure that he doesn't get fined. Like, I don't know how all of this works, because he might just say, look, you're not going to fine me $50,000 a day. I'm going out there. You don't want me out here? Then you're still going to pay me. And if you go on the commissioner's exemplar, at some point the Texans have to know what the NFL is going to do. You just do. Running your business, are you going to suspend him? You're going to put him on the commissioner's exempt list? What can we do? They got to move forward with this. And that's, the NFL has to be fair to the Texans. And they also have to be fair to Deshaun Watson, give him due process here. Yeah, Paul.
And they have to be fair to the teams that are considering trading for him. If you're the Denver Broncos, don't you have to call the commissioner's office or someone and say, look, what's this per player's status?
Yeah.
What, off the record, even off the record, what's the likelihood that you sit him for the season because of this? Because that affects my trade pitch. If I know I don't get him for 8 games.
Yeah. Let me get a couple of phone calls. I'll get one phone call in here. I'll squeeze in Andrew in Michigan, and Bob Costas will join us coming up. Andrew, what's on your mind?
Hey, DP. First time, long time. 5'11", 180. First of all, I just want to thank you, all the Danettes, and all of your guests who are unafraid to share your mental health stories. As somebody who struggles with mental health, with depression and anxiety, high stress, and with a lot of friends who do as well. Over the last day, I finally come to understand, just how important Simone Biles' story is, with her being able to share her story. And yet, when I first heard it yesterday, I'll be honest, my first reaction as a teacher and with many friends who are frontline workers was, well, we go into high stress situations all the time, but we can't just leave. So I'm curious just to get your thoughts on how we can move this forward. So that not only athletes, but the everyday person can move forward and improve their mental health.
Thanks. Thank you, Andrew. I don't have answers, and I've said that from the outset. I can only tell you from my experience what I felt like. I did not want to talk about it. It was my wife who said, you're uncomfortable talking about it. You can make others feel comfortable if you talk about it. But I don't have answers. But the answer would be, talk to somebody. Yes, Eden.
And people in those lines of work do struggle with mental health. They do have stress and anxiety disorders all the time. I mean, PTSD is a very real thing that people in those types of line of work can suffer from.
And I know that we want to congratulate or condemn Simone Biles. And you can be in the middle on this. You can understand we want our athletes to fight through. They fight through injuries. This is an injury you don't see. But you can see it with Simone Biles. You can see it in her face. When you watch her, when she dismounts off the vault, there is fear and confusion, in my opinion, in her face. Truly is. I commend her that she stayed on the floor. She was there to cheer on her teammates. She answered questions at a press conference. But this doesn't just go away. And I know she said, hey, got some things I got to work out internally. It doesn't just magically go away. Over time, can she come back over this, you know, over the weekend and be able to compete? I don't know. And maybe, the slightest misstep, and then she decides she doesn't want to do it. I just think it's different than 5 years ago. I think it's really different. And the telling quote to me with Simone Biles was, I can't wait for the Olympics to be over. The great Bob Costas will join us coming up next here on the Dan Patrick Show. It's amazing. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically. There's no limit on how much you can earn. It's amazing. In fact, even more amazing because of all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of the places in the United States that take credit cards take Discover. And you know what that means. When it comes to Discover, get used to hearing the word yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. Discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Dale Earnhardt Jr. in an hour from now. Make way for Bob Costas, the Hall of Fame broadcaster. HBO's Back on the Record with Bob Costas. That will make its debut this Friday night at 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. It can also be streamed on HBO Max. Each episode features extended conversations with some of the biggest names in sports, from present-day superstars to legends of the past. Bob joins us now. So who's the first guest on Friday night, Bob?
Well, it's an obvious get, you might say, but Charles Barkley is the leadoff, and the difference between this, we hope, and how you see him on TNT, where it's so terrific with Ernie and the gang, is that this will be a more extended conversation. I'm sure a lot of it will be very funny. Almost inevitably, it'll be provocative. So we'll have that, and then we have Ali Raisman, which turns out to be even more timely than we thought when we booked it. We'll have a closing essay and commentary. Bomani Jones is a regular on the show. He'll be part of a three-person panel every show. The other two people this time are Renee Montgomery, the former WNBA star who's now a part owner of the Atlanta Dream in the league, and David Cohn, the Yankee pitcher, to talk about a former Yankee pitcher, now broadcaster, to talk about a lot of what's going on in baseball.
What are you looking for in this show?
You know, the name pretty much says it. Back on the Record. We're not reinventing anything. I did the On the Record show from 01 through 08 on HBO, and then when the Baseball Network came into existence, they wanted me to be part of that, and baseball is my favorite sport, so I wanted to do it. And HBO at that time said, hey, we want you to stay, but you got to choose. So I chose the baseball and reluctantly left HBO behind. Otherwise, I would have just stayed indefinitely. Now things have changed a little bit. They invited me back. I'm only doing four of them a year. At this point, Dan, you know, you're working 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. That's not my ideal situation anymore. So it's supposed to be quarterly. We got pushed back a couple of times by COVID. So we'll do one a month for the next 4 months just to get the four in for 2021. Then next year we'll go on a quarterly cycle. And I think the idea is HBO already has real sports. It's the 60 minutes of sports. It's fantastic on its own terms. We're not trying to replicate that, not trying to replicate what we see on a daily or weekly basis on cable TV sports coverage. I just hope that on its own terms, it's good. I hope that there's some depth to it, some entertainment to it. I hope it brings to bear some of the things I've done reasonably well over the course of my career.
Who is your favorite guest from On the Record?
Well, the one they talk about the most is Vince McMahon. It was good television, HBO, no commercials, and it was live. It turned out to be 27, 28 minutes of unremitting tension. And then after he went storming off the set, all we had was like a 20-second bumper to get me to the next setup on the set. So I walk over and sit down, and the next guest is Bob Knight. And I said, Coach, I said, Coach, this is the one and only time in your life when your presence will lower the temperature in the room.
Did you think Vince McMahon was going to hit you?
No. No, I knew he was obviously, you know, getting very, very angry. That was authentic. He was very, very angry. And I think he was trying to intimidate me through body language and jabbing a finger at me. But, you know, maybe I'm just dumb. But I never thought he was going to smack me. Okay, so now he goes storming off. And you know how heavy the doors are to a studio.
Yeah.
He slammed that thing as if it was a screen door on your back porch in Mayberry. I mean, you could hear the thing reverberate. And so now the show is over, and the stage manager and some of the cameramen men come up, hey, Bob, if he had jumped you, we had your back. Wait a minute. You're over here behind a mile of cable. I'm 6 inches from this madman.
Can you watch the Olympics as a fan now?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I watch it casually, just like I did the 2018 Winter Games from Pyeongchang. I'm interested not only in some of the competition, but in how my former colleagues and longtime friends are doing. I've texted a few of them before and during the games, but I'm not obsessed with it. I'm not sitting there monitoring it. If I plop down on the couch and something's going on, then I check it out.
And of all the great things you did with the Olympics, and I'm sure pink eye, conjunctivitis still comes up, certainly in the time of the Olympics, how often does it come up?
It comes up pretty frequently, and I know it's part of my obituary, and in the darker recesses of the internet, there are bizarre theories as to how I contracted it, none of which are remotely true, you know, but you have to have a sense of humor about it. At the time, I tried to just, you know, acknowledge it. You had to. If you just felt lousy, you go to work. We've all done that. If I had a broken leg, it would have been in a cast under the desk, wouldn't have to refer to it. But it was literally written right there on my face. So I just tried to have a line or two to acknowledge it and then move on as best I could. But the amazing thing is that some people think that I am subject to illness and specifically pink eye only during the Olympics. So we go from 2014 to 2016 in Rio, and it's like, Bob, how are your eyes? What is it, only during that specific quadrennial period that I'm going to get pink eye?
Wait, do you have it this week? You didn't get it this week.
No.
Okay.
No. I think I pulled a hamstring getting out of bed, but apart from that.
When you know the results and it's tape delayed, but do you have to, can you present it, or is the feeling to present it in a way that, hey, I'm going to act as if I don't know what happened?
No, I think what we always tried to do was acknowledge on the first night of competition, not the opening ceremony, but the first night of full competition, if it was the circumstance where all of it had to be presented on tape or a substantial amount, you acknowledge that, and then you try and use the right tense instead of is going for his or her second gold medal, was going for his or her second gold medal. I'm sure there were unintentional slip-ups occasionally, but you try to let them know up front, this is what it is. You don't reiterate it every night because some people want to experience it as they're watching it, if not as it happens. We hear that all the time. If you don't want to know the result, turn away. But now as the world has changed a whole lot since my first Olympics in 1988, we know that millions and millions of people are aware of what's happened. Millions more still just want to see it with the full presentation, with the backstories and the features and everything else. The most extreme was Sydney in 2000, where you're literally a world away. And some of the events that I was leading into, the next day, not only did I know the result, I had attended them the night before, and I'm reading about them in the Sydney newspapers as I'm in the car on the way to the studio. So I felt then as if I was on the History Channel.
You didn't have a cutaway of you in the crowd where you then commented on you being in the crowd while you were hosting the Olympics, did you?
You know, I was not bright enough to demand that. That would have been very amusing, but it didn't happen.
How often have you doubted yourself when you're broadcasting?
You know, I don't want to get too deeply into this, but when you're doing play-by-play, in my case, baseball now, and you get into your 60s, you have to realize that unless you really watch it, you're not exactly as sharp as you used to be. You know, during COVID, before there were any games, both the NBA network and the baseball network were showing classic games. And I would stumble across some of them. Mm. In fact, I think it was on your show, Dan, when Al Michaels and I were on at the same time.
Yeah.
And Al said, I'm on three networks at once, football, baseball, and NBA games. And on occasion, I was on at least two at once. And then YouTube tosses stuff out there, stuff you don't even remember doing or haven't thought about in a long time. And I contrast the level of sharpness from the 80s and 90s. You know, I think I'm still pretty sharp, but is there a fall off that at least I can recognize from maybe 100% to 92% or 93% on occasion? Yeah. And so maybe like a pitcher whose stuff has changed but can still be effective, you change your approach a little bit. So I have to be careful. And the other thing that's happened is, you know, your eyesight isn't quite as good as you get older. And so in baseball, unlike basketball or something, that wouldn't affect me much. In baseball, you're calling the game, you got a monitor in the booth, but if there's a long fly ball to the outfield and you're recessed from the backstop by I don't know how many feet, but you're probably at that point 600, 700 feet away, with the naked eye, you can't 100% trust yourself on the flight of the ball, so you got to go off the monitor. So I tend to slow things down a little bit rather than just kind of jumping on it right away. I try to be a little bit more cautious. What a boring answer, but you asked.
But then you have the luxury of a Shohei Ohtani home run where you don't have to go, I don't know if that's going to get out of here.
Yeah, right.
I've never, can you remember, and you've been at the ballpark all your life, but the sound is different, Bob, with Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, there have been through the years a handful of hitters for whom that applies. I remember the late, great Buck O'Neill talking about that and saying when he closed his eyes, he knew it was Babe Ruth or Josh Gibson, the other one he cited from the Negro Leagues, and then later on Mickey Mantle, and then after that Bo Jackson. I think Shohei is on that short list where literally if you turned your back during batting practice, the sound coming off their bats was different.
Yeah, I would go. You could go and just listen to batting practice with Ohtani and be entertained. You don't even have to watch because I love the, it's in your mind like, oh my God, where's that gone? It's like radio. If you listen, that you just hear the crack of the bat and it's just, it's, Seton, do you have Shohei Ohtani's home run from last night? Let's see if we can, okay, here you go. It sounds like it's out of a cartoon, doesn't it?
It sure does. And, you know, people talk about the launch angle approach, and some are critical of it because it's part of what's created these three perfect outcomes, strikeout, walk, home run, deprives baseball of action. But when you have someone who's perfected it, if Ted Williams saw Shohei Ohtani, he would approve of Shohei's approach. It is a perfect, natural uppercut swing. But he also excels at putting the ball in play. I mean, here's a guy who'll pitch six innings for you, maybe six shutout innings. I haven't checked recently, but at one point, he led the league in triples. He steals bases. Yeah. He does everything.
Is he better than Babe Ruth?
So difficult to compare. Ruth, when he was primarily pitching, was one of the great pitchers of his time and would have made the Hall of Fame as a pitcher. And then when he became primarily a hitter, almost exclusively, he dominated the league in a way that no one else has in baseball. It's comparable to Wilt Chamberlain averaging 50 in basketball, or Wayne Gretzky's gap over everyone else in goals, assists, and total points. Before the rest of baseball sort of caught up, Ruth was hitting more home runs than entire teams. So, but he never blended hitting and pitching at this level of effectiveness the way Ohtani did. So you can make a case for Ohtani looking at it from that perspective, another case for Ruth from the other perspective, and then you just have to say, wait a minute, you know, comparing eras and the circumstances under which they competed makes it an interesting parlor game, but you can never arrive at a definitive answer.
You remember your first game in person?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I got to give two answers to this. My dad, I don't know if he was prescient or it was just luck. In 1957, I'm 5 years old, he took me to a game at Ebbets Field, so I can say I went to a game at Ebbets Field. I don't remember anything except how green the grass was, and you've heard people tell that story all the time. It's like Dorothy arriving in Oz, and it goes from black and white to color, because all anybody had then was a black and white television set with a tiny screen. I don't remember any particulars of the game. He also took me to one at the Polo Grounds, and as I'm sitting on his shoulders toward the back of the grandstand, he said to me, "Bobby, look at that player right there. No, no, not that one. The one in the middle. That's Willie Mays." As if he was farsighted enough to know that that would be something I'd want to remember for the rest of my life. As if he was saying, "Son, that's the Washington Monument. That's the Eiffel Tower. That's Willie Mays." But I don't remember any particulars of the game. The game I remember, I was seven, and my dad took me to a late season game between the Orioles and the Yankees at the old Yankee Stadium. And I was heartbroken that Mantle didn't play that day. And the Orioles won the game 7-2. And back then, you could leave. They'd let the fans leave by walking around the warning track. And then they'd open up the bullpen gates, and you poured out into the street where the elevated subway was. So we walk around, and it's awe-inspiring enough, the old Yankee Stadium, the wedding cake facade, the three decks of the whole thing. But then the monuments, and there were only three of them at that time, the monuments were on the field because center field was 461 feet from home plate. So the three monuments to Ruth, Gehrig, and their manager, Miller Huggins, are right there with the flagpole behind it. And we get to the monuments, and what would any seven-year-old kid think? I thought they were buried there on the warning track. I honestly thought, Dan, this was the sacred Yankee burial ground, and Joe DiMaggio would be interred there, and eventually, and this is the part that really got to me, Mickey Mantle was going to be buried there. And I started to cry. My father's trying to assure me, yeah, these three guys are dead, but they're buried someplace else. So.
Given the craziness of this, you know, sports collection, business, how valuable are your baseball cards, your Mickey Mantle card?
You know, the one that I save is from 1958, the first one I remember getting out of a Topps pack of Topps bubblegum cards. I imagine that one's worth, since it's in pretty good condition, somewhere in the single digits in the thousands, maybe 4,000 or 5,000.
Okay.
But, you know, a mint condition 1952 Mantle, there was a big story recently in Sports Illustrated about this. Those are going for into the millions of dollars.
Bob has got his new show. It's old show, just it's a newer version of his older show. It's called Back on the Record with Bob Costas. That'll be coming up this Friday night at 11 Eastern, 11 Pacific. Charles Barkley will sit down with him. Back on the Record with Bob Costas. Great to have you back on the show, Bob. Thanks for joining us as always, and good luck with the program.
Thanks a lot, Dan. See ya.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We argue over stupid things. We do. During the commercial break, I got Paulie and McLovin going back and forth on is Bryce Harper going to the Hall of Fame? I said, I'm gonna keep moving. I'm going to go in the back row and talk to Fritzy. That's how much I don't want to get involved in this conversation. He's got an MVP. He's going to the Hall of Fame. And I go, I don't think so.
Why do you guys think Bryce Harper is such a disappointment? He's playing really, really well right now. He's got an amazing career going.
Paulie, you rebuttal?
Okay. Bryce Harper is a very good player. He won.
You have no idea what Bryce Harper's doing this year. You have no idea.
Yeah, he's having a very good year for him. He's having a great year.
Did you know that before I told you that 5 minutes ago?
No. I can tell you what he did the past 3 years when he didn't make the All-Star team.
Also, we got into Steven Strasburg, who's out for the year. I think that's why Paulie was asking about it.
I wrote a poll question, McLovin, to keep in his back pocket. Okay. Of sure thing athletes who didn't make the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Most surprising.
All right.
And so Bryce Harper, it's fair to say, he's 10 years in. He's been top five for MVP once out of 10 seasons, and he won it that year.
Okay.
But it's fair to say he's a career 277 hitter who averages about 33 home runs a year. He's a very good player.
He's 28.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's cooled off, too.
We don't talk about him. You know, I think that's probably why it feels like he's underachieved. And he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. We heard about him when he was, 16 or 17. He was living up to the hype. But then it felt like it was hype that he wasn't actually producing as much as you would expect from him. So he's obviously a very good ball player. Is he a Hall of Famer? I mean, he's going to be compared to Mike Trout. And that's not a fair comparison, but he's not Mike Trout. Yes, so
he's got 6 All-Star appearances at 28. I mean, he's definitely got a shot.
He's popular.
He's productive.
Popular. That's how you make the All-Star team.
He's pretty productive, too.
Dale Jr. is the most popular driver, and he's not even driving anymore. He wasn't a top-5 driver, but he was the most popular.
He's got one big problem. The shift is a destroyer of men, and he's not alone. Like, there are a lot of good left-handed hitters.
Yeah. See, I should have just kept walking. I just should have just keep walking back and actually talk to Todd or just let him talk, and I act like I'm listening.
Yeah. He had a nice inside the park home run last night. See him flying around the bases against the Braves.
He didn't get the ball out of the ballpark.
That's great. Yes, McLovin.
I was going to ask, is Strasburg, since he did win that World Series, has he gone out of the disappointment category? Was that enough?
Well, did he disappoint or did the analysts disappoint us? Because they're the ones that said this guy can't miss. The same analysts who probably said Mark Pryor can't miss for the Chicago Cubs. When you say somebody can't miss, then what's the ceiling and then what's the floor? Strasburg has been very good. He's not great. He's not going to the Hall of Fame. He's not Scherzer. But he has been, he's been great at times. I remember when he first started throwing in the minor leagues, we had Bob Costas on and John Smoltz. They were calling the game. They were talking about as if he was Cy Young or Walter Johnson. And sometimes what happens is you want to bubble wrap these players. And, you know, you coddle them a little bit. And then your agent, Scott Boras, and he's probably saying, hey, don't overwork my pitcher. You know, if you want him to re-sign, you got to make sure that you're not overworking. Okay. So I think Strasburg has been a good to very good, but I don't know. It'd be pretty hard to live up to that hype. Yeah, McLovin.
Is Jacob deGrom, by the way, I know this is complicated. He feels like he's already a Hall of Famer, and he's barely, you know, his numbers are still on the rise.
But if he wins 2 more Cy Youngs,
but can he do that health-wise? That's what I was wondering.
Well, if he does, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think it's going to be win total because he's not going to have big numbers there. But Jacob deGrom didn't have the buildup of some of these other pitchers where you're like, okay, let's see what you got. It was like Jacob deGrom, and then he's part of a couple other pitchers with the Mets. Yeah, Paul.
It's really too bad for deGrom because this year he was on his way to a historical season. In 15 starts, his ERA was 1.08. Not 1.8, 1.08. That would have been historical by far.
Deshaun Watson's on the practice field with a helmet on. He is wearing a mask for COVID, and he's got his red quarterback jersey on to protect him. It appears he's going to work out for the Texans here. And if I'm Deshaun Watson, I want to push this a little bit. I mean, appear innocent. I want to be out there playing. And if you think I'm a distraction, then trade me. So I have to be careful, though, because I'm not siding with Deshaun Watson with what happened off the field. I am just looking at him as, what are his rights? What should he be able to do? Are you cleared? Yes. Have you been charged with anything? No. Is the NFL doing anything yet? No. Team doing anything? No. Then he should be able to be out there practicing. Now, you can say, we don't want you out there. You're a distraction, conduct detrimental, but you can only suspend him for 4 games. Is that fair to him, Deshaun Watson? Yeah, McClellan.
This is really a mess for the NFL. Is this kind of their worst case scenario?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. The quarterbacking situation in San Francisco is also interesting with Kyle Shanahan. The Niners head coach was talking about who's the best quarterback in the room right now with the 49ers.
Anytime a guy's playing a lot better than the guy in front of him is when you start to split reps up with that team and start to talk about it. But, Trace had 7 practices with us and haven't seen him for 40 days. So not thinking about that right now. Just having Jimmy go in, he's our starter, and you're going to give all those guys every opportunity to improve. And if someone ever looks like they give us a better chance to win, we'll make that decision then.
Yes, yeah,
I don't even think Trey Lance is signed yet.
No, he's not.
Yeah, Jimmy's the starter. We don't even have another quarterback yet.
And he's just talking about, off-season workouts here. You know, hadn't been around 30 days. Like, he's sending a message here. Yeah, Garoppolo is the best quarterback in the room right now. That's not a ringing endorsement for a team that probably flirted with the Packers with Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and they drafted Trey Lance. He's the best quarterback in the room right now. Yeah, Paul.
Coach, which is the better quarterback? The one who led you to the Super Bowl and almost won it a couple years ago, or the one who's not signed, who's an FCS player who's about 18 years old?
By the way, I know we have this blanket stamp of approval on Patrick Mahomes. If you look at his Super Bowl numbers, they are pedestrian. And he's won one and he's lost one. If he had lost the second one, or lost the first one to the Niners, I mean, would we be talking differently about Patrick Mahomes?
Overrated.
We would be saying, well, can he win the big one? I don't know. John Elway's Super Bowl stats weren't good either. I mean, they're bad. Patrick Mahomes, they're not good either. 4 picks, 2 touchdowns in 2 Super Bowls for Patrick Mahomes. Right? Now you can say, well, he faced great defenses. Yeah, he did. It's hard to get to a Super Bowl. You go, man, we're glad they have a crappy defense. Yes, McLovin.
Why does it feel like wrong that you're saying that, though?
I know. You know what I mean? I know, because everybody has declared him, like, that's the best quarterback in football. Okay. He hasn't been great in the Super Bowl. Yes, he.
Well, when he signed that deal, I remember we were talking there's just as much chance that he's not going to be good the next 10 years, too. Like, he's not guaranteed to get another 7 rings or something.
But he's been christened the best quarterback. And then when you bring up the Super Bowl and people are like, wait, what? Yeah, he hasn't done much in the Super Bowl. If they don't get if San Francisco gets a first down, he doesn't win a Super Bowl. Might be different. Dale Jr. got some serious conversation with Dale Jr. He'll join us coming up as well. Final hour. One more item. We close out the second hour. Do you have a sleep routine? Do you go to bed and wake up around the same time every day, including weekends? According to the Sleep Foundation, consistent sleep strengthens your immune system, and lack of sleep can literally make you sick and unable to meet the challenges of the day. You want to take advantage of a great night's sleep, and then you win with those health benefits. So you go to bed, you wake up around the same time. This helps establish your sleep and wake cycle. That's known as your circadian rhythm. And if you're looking for data-proven ways to sync your rhythm, Sleep Number Smart bed sleepers use the bed circadian rhythm feature that improves their bedtime and wake time consistency by 35 minutes for better quality sleep. There's other tips. Avoid alcohol. Room temperature is really important. Sleep Number is not just, hey, we're a bed with a number. Far more than that. Sleep Number 360 smart beds, adjustable bases starting at $1,099. For a limited time at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/Patrick.